So, going to start with a poem. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live, so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. So this is the poem that I thought of when Singamati gave me the title of the talk today, Peace is a Fire. And I think it communicates a courage and a fearlessness to really live, to really feel. And it's only then that we will change, we will grow. We say, don't we, it was a baptism by fire when something was difficult to go through, maybe a new experience. So I think that this phrase comes from the Bible first, but a later definition of this phrase describes a soldier's first experience of battle. Baptism, because battle is new to him, and fire, from the firing of the guns, that he is under fire. The Dharma life is a battle against our ego, our samskaras, our habitual ways of being. And the greatest victory is over ourselves and whatever we see we have to work with. As the Dharmapada says, she who conquers herself has a more glorious victory. But victory doesn't always mean pushing through. It can also mean sitting loose to things, cultivating trust and patience and letting go. The victory to see how things really are. And it is painful to walk into the fire and to stay with it, to stay there. Maybe with the burning up of greed, hatred and delusion, seeing our negative habitual tendencies with our growing awareness, seeing how we hurt those around us, often those we love the most, through our ignorance, our unawakenedness. But I think this seeing the dukkha in ourselves and others gives us the power and the strength to change. With the Dharma, it is possible. It can, if we respond positively, be an impetus for transformation, this dukkha, and love for others and ourselves. We don't want to hurt or to harm. But we do really need to see the effect we have on others, positive and negative. And I don't realise the extent of this myself. I bury my head in the sand, getting lost in a self-referential world, and I'm almost shocked every time I pull my head out. I try and have tried over the years to stay with the pain, stay with the loss, but this is not what we do in the world, is it? The world takes us away from our direct experience with its many consumerist instant delights. The next box set on Netflix or Amazon Prime. The next episode of a series on YouTube. The next shiny new item of shopping that will make us more beautiful, happier, or make our lives run smoother. The next subject of my intoxication. Staying with, gently leaning in and settling into the dukkha allows us to open up to inhabit our days. We break open to something else. Our heart breaks open and allows us to fully experience that which we were shut off to previously because of fear of feeling. I remember thinking years ago, if I go there, I will never stop crying. And I didn't for what felt like months, and I had to come off the team at the Newcomers Light at the Cultural Stability Centre because I'd put people off. I did eventually, obviously, stop crying, but it's a mistake. This not feeling and distracting ourselves is actually worse in the long run. It's cutting off, deadening us, and we're walking around like zombies. Because after that time of going through it, of feeling things were falling apart, when I did stop crying, I felt like I experienced joy more. I felt more connected to my life, the world, and the people around me. And I have random feelings of uprising of joy in my experience, which were never present in my experience before. Because in my attempt to control my experience, to shut off or distract myself from unpleasant Vedana or pain or dukkha, I had also cut off the possibility of experiencing joy and peace as well. Bhante writes in Living Wisely, "After all, the spiritual life is a happy life. If you cannot be happy following the spiritual path and living in accordance with the Dharma, how are you ever going to be happy? Buddhism may not be easy, but even at its most difficult, it should certainly not be miserable." This is a constant theme in the songs of Milarepa. The Tibetan yogi Milarepa lived a life of extreme physical hardship, but communicated his joy in the Dharma through his songs. One of the stories about Milarepa describes a young man who, even as he is reduced to suicidal despair by Milarepa's initial refusal to take him on as a disciple, declares, "I have never been so happy as today." The spiritual life is sometimes like that. You may be experiencing real suffering, and at the same time, you have never been so happy in your life. This is happiness in a deeper sense than mere pleasurable feeling. It is the happiness that comes from faith. The way of life to which this faith leads you may sometimes be difficult, but you know in your heart of hearts that you're on the right track. So this is a poem that my friend sent me last week. Rootedness, a practice. Stay somewhere. Remain in one place. For longer than you imagine will be comfortable. An hour, a day, a week, a season. Stay there for whatever length of time will, you know, be more than you would choose. Give yourself to the place and to the moment. Picture yourself growing roots into the ground of the place. Don't be bashful about belonging here. Look people in the eye when you meet. Believe that this is your place of wisdom finding, your homecoming, your thin place, your place of resurrection. This poem reminds me of my Yidam Akshobhya and his earth-touching Bhumi Sparsha Mudra. He is rooted to the earth, not moving, with the wisdom strength of the Vajra at his heart. He symbolises the time in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment when all hell was breaking loose around him. Arrows were being fired at him, sexy women attempting to seduce him, and then the final crux, doubt. When that hit, he touched the earth. Believe that this is your place of wisdom finding. Because if you leg it again, internally or externally, psychologically or spiritually, what is going to change? This staying somewhere or doing something we wouldn't usually do, acting creatively, can show us a different life, a different way of living or being, when before we didn't know there was any other way of being. Staying in this place, being interested, being curious about our experience without blame, is the place of deepening, of going deeper. And once we see this, there is a freedom, an openness. We see that all is possible, like a phoenix rising from the ashes. Fire purifies, doesn't it? After forest fires, after the destruction, which is painful, the loss of life, of home, everything. But after that, the soil is fertile for new growth. It's been fertilised. And after a time, seeds start to grow. New shoots pop up and life grows again. And this again is like the phoenix rising, like the tower falling card in the tarot. It symbolises destruction and is negative on one side, but is positive in that on the other side of this coin is the openness it creates. The opportunity of clearing away the old and making way for the new. Recently, my sister sent me pictures of all these bags of clothes that she'd thrown away and given to charity. There were loads of them all over her sofa and another chair in her lounge. And all the clothes that she had kept were neatly folded in her drawers, and there wasn't very much in her wardrobe, and they were just neatly lined up. Just a few things. And I thought, wow, you know, that was her home. My home was just like a jumble sale. Loads of clothes were coming out the wardrobe, a bar at the end of my bed, clothes hanging on the outside of my wardrobe. I was like, I could never do that. It was something that I could only aspire to. So she recommended I read this book that she was reading, and I got rid of 10 bin liners from my room alone. And as I was clearing things away, I found letters and cards from my friend Atulia Matty, who was giving me thanks for like all the talks that I'd given, or rejoicing in my merits. And I thought, wow, I never do that for people now, but I want to be more like that. So I started sending appreciative texts to people that had done talks that I'd asked them to do, and things like that. And I hope that I continue this practice and be more like my friend. So in all this rubbish, I found a jewel. And this theme of the phoenix is current at the moment in my life with the closure of Windhorse. My husband worked there for many, many years and is now out of a job, as so many other people are. But of course, it was more than a job. A place of friendship, a context for practice. I was on the team which started Colchester Evolution in 2007, and I worked there for 5 years, 3 years before I was ordained and 2 years after. And it was the first Buddhist team to open an evolution for over 10 years. It was my baby, a project I poured my heart and soul into. And they say, don't they, that working in team-based right livelihood is like being in an oven, intense practice, which is why I wanted to do it. I wanted transformation, and living and working with Buddhists is the way to do it. And I thought evolution would be like a goldfish bowl for everyone to see everything. And the communication challenges that I came up against the evolution were nothing like I'd ever imagined. But neither was the love, the connection and the friendship. So at the beginning, when we first started out in 2007, one of the team was quite aggressive towards me. And he eventually left, but before he did, going into work every day was a challenge, and I never thought I'd be facing something like that in a Buddhist shop. Another of our team had cancer, and she died just as I arrived to visit her in a hospital in London. So the ups and downs of those 5 years were more transformative than I can say. I have forged what will hopefully be lifelong friendships, deep connections from working together on a collective project during that time. And I felt really integrated. I was a Buddhist at home, at work, and at the centre. And the constant koan for me was how to be a manager, which seemed to be a power mode position, in the love mode. And I got it wrong, time and time again. But I learned that to transform was to take responsibility for my part, and to apologise for that. To apologise as a human, not from the status that I occupy. I learned that everyone is different deeply, whereas before I thought that everyone was like me, surely. Choosing to risk my significance. But there was the mistake. The power isn't really in the power mode. It's in the love mode. The real power is in the courage to be vulnerable. So what I loved most about this time was getting to know other people, getting to know their strengths and where lied their opportunities for growth, and helping them to see those, to facilitate that. It was inspiring, and I feel so proud of the women that came to us as seed and went on as blossom. And this is just not a theme for me at the moment. It's a theme for the team of Bitterford East, who've taken this on for the summer gathering this year. And the symbol on our poster is the phoenix rising from the ashes. So these are a couple of definitions of the phoenix from the internet. So a phoenix is a unique bird in classical mythology that lived for 5 or 6 centuries in the Arabian desert. After this time, burning itself on a funeral pyre and rising from the ashes with renewed youth to live through another cycle. Good old Wikipedia. In Greek mythology, a phoenix is a long-lived bird that is cyclically regenerated or reborn. Associated with the sun, a phoenix obtains new life by arising from the ashes of its predecessor. The phoenix was subsequently adopted as a symbol in early Christianity. While the phoenix typically dies in a show of flames and combustion in most versions of the legend, there are less popular versions of the myth, in which the mythical bird simply dies and decomposes before being born again. So for us, this could symbolise spiritual death and rebirth, whether that's in a fantastically dramatic way or a quiet, unassuming way. There is the death of the old, which makes way for something new. I remember a time when I felt a prolonged sense of emotional pain. I was supposed to be going on a retreat at Tiruvannamalai, but instead I changed it and came on Vidyamala's One Moment at a Time retreat that she does here at Tiruvannamalai, a retreat for people managing pain. I felt a bit like a fraud that I was there for emotional pain rather than having back pain or an injury or something like that. But I wanted to be able to be with it, to lean into it, and to use it as an impetus for transformation. It was a bit like what Singamati was saying yesterday, really using dukkha as a gateway to liberation. But at the time, actually, it was more like I wanted to grab it and not let it go so that I would not forget, and to really use that. But maybe this is what Chogyam Trungpa calls the wounded heart, or the heart of sadness. Anyway, the treat was fantastic, and it was just what I needed at that time. And at the end of one of our meetings, Vidyamala gave me this poem. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart, as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole, while learning to sing. So at this time, other books like When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron and Radical Acceptance, Tara Brach, Rituals, my GFR group, friendships, as well as meeting Atala, who's an order member who works his magic in the order, were instrumental in guiding me gently through the uncharted waters of the depths of my being. What a time. The falling apart, what can feel like hell at the time, can be a journey to a new way of being. So I'm going to read a bit from Bhante's autobiography. So this is when him and his friend are walking around looking for a teacher, and they're looking for someone to ordain him. And they've just been, they're in India walking around, and they've just been refused by somebody. But then they were recommended to go to somebody else who was well known for the generosity with which he gave ordinations. So this is Thousand Petal Lotus. These words filled us with fresh hope, and we decided to leave for Kusinara without delay. Since we had no money, we would have to walk. But so great was our desire for ordination that if necessary, we would have prostrated ourselves the whole distance, as Tibetan pilgrims sometimes did all the way from Lhasa to Bodh Gaya. When we told our friends at the Ramakrishna Mission what we proposed to do, they were horrified. Kusinara was well over 100 miles from Benares, they protested, and it was the hottest time of year. We would never reach our destination alive. The dreaded hot wind from the deserts of western India had already started blowing, and every day the newspapers carried reports of people dropping dead from the heat. Why not stay in Benares a few weeks and leave as soon as the early monsoon rains had cooled the air? This was sensible advice, and in any other circumstances we would have heeded it. Having just spent several hours walking to the university and back in the furnace-like heat of the midday, we knew only too well what awaited us at almost every step of our journey. A curtain of fire hung between us and our goal. Nevertheless, our minds were made up. There was no time to be lost. Through the curtain of fire we would go, or perish in the attempt. So the courage and the commitment here is quite astronomical, actually. Walking through a curtain of fire, and the faith to walk the journey or die, trying, is quite remarkable and inspiring. So So I did a 6 month course with Attila last year, 1 weekend a month of group work, and I found it really difficult to speak in that situation, to surrender or descend in that space. Speaking in front of a large group of people is difficult for me, but not least to open up in that way in this situation. So I'm going to do an eight day retreat with him this September again. And this tends to be the way that I practice. If I find something difficult, I try and do it more. And I found my first order weekend at Padmaloka uncomfortable. No one really spoke to me. No one really knew me. And I thought, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm going to have to keep doing this until it's not. The next one was in Scotland. The first and last, as in we haven't had one since, Women's National Order Weekend. And people were really impressed that I travelled that far just for the weekend, and my reply was that I had to because I'd found the last one so difficult. And I loved that weekend. People were really friendly and I've enjoyed them ever since. And I've spent the last almost five years attending as many order events as I can, trying to see where I fit, where I belong in the order, finding my place. So fire is active and transforming, and I think if we can remain on the edge of things with our practice, always feeling that uncomfortable edge, that bite, that's like being in the fire for me. And that's the fertile ground for growth, always actively giving ourselves or putting ourselves in conditions that we find uncomfortable, where we feel vulnerable, going there, risking our significance, growing into things, particularly if it's for the benefit of others. So that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. Give more talks, teach a bit more, be more upfront, move towards people, look deeply at what is mine, taking responsibility and looking at what conditions I can put in place to transform. And this process is painful and is not comfortable for me. And this is not my natural way of being, but I do have the faith that I can move closer to my goal, to be more fully Sujayani. I'd like to be more open, loving, clear and confident, and to be able to do these things more easily, so that I will just do it until I hopefully become that. Just as Aristotle said, act as if and you will become, or until people stop asking me because I'm so terrible at it. So when we were training for ordination, this is like me and Karen and Dee when I say we, we were on some kind of retreat every month. I used to go to Te Ratnaloka sometimes 3 times a year, on solitary once a year, and then Taraloka or some kind of meditation retreat every year, as well as local weekends. On the long retreats, I used to joke, if I don't cry at some point, I want my money back. I'm there to hit the depths, for stuff to come up. And if a week didn't do it, go on a longer one. I say that to women in my Mitra study group now. You know it's a good retreat if you've fallen apart, if something's come up. What does that mean? So for me, it means hitting something, giving me something to work with, some material, something juicy to get my teeth stuck into. Maybe that's my curtain of fire. And then there is the being in it and the seeing through it, as Singer Matty says, which for me comes when my mind drops into a vast awareness, and then what seems so big suddenly seems so small. And if we hold this awareness at the same time and focus on whatever it is, it dissipates like clouds breaking up in a huge blue sky. So when Singer Matty was talking yesterday, I was reminded of it's like a piece of writing, but it's set to music on YouTube. I don't know if anyone's heard it. It's a recording by Sogyal Rinpoche, and it's Rest in Natural Great Peace. When you get home to your computers, type it in, Rest in Natural Great Peace, and listen to it. I think it's really beautiful. I first heard it at the end of an ecstatic dance workshop at Bitterfield, actually. Anyway, it goes, Rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural great peace. So for me, I think that piece just kind of said to me, suffering is universal, actually. It's not just personal to me. Everybody is in this relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. So I think I found this fire with spiritual friendships as well, when there are difficulties. It's just so painful. I find it so painful. But in the world, what do? We fall out with someone and we just never speak to them again. But we can't do that in the Sangha, can we? And to stop going along to the Buddhist centre just because we don't like someone there is shooting myself or ourselves in the foot a bit. So we just stay put. We keep going to women's group or Mitra study or GFR group or chapter. And we may see that person may more clearly, or something may drop away, or there may be a bigger issue that requires talking about. But it takes so much courage to be vulnerable in that space, and faith, otherwise we wouldn't be there in the first place. But working through things with our friends, others also working in the Dharma, just as we are, is a real fire for transformation. And to keep going back there, entering into the communication, working through, owning, is so painful for me. It's like I surrender my life every time, a mini spiritual death. But in those times, I ask myself, what have I got to lose? There is no me, no self to protect. And in that way, as there is no me and no you in that moment or any moment, there is so much more going on underneath, so much more than what it looks like is going on. It never is just me and you. Go into that, be curious, what's underneath? And then on the other side of that, once you have gone through it, there is a depth of connection between this bunch of samskaras or habits and that bunch of samskaras or habits, and a depth of trust that you've both gone through this, demonstrated commitment to each other, to going for refuge, a deepening of friendship. And the relationship opens out into this peace. So every time I go into a difficult conversation, it's like walking into a fire. So I'm happier when I'm working on my stuff, seeing my samskaras, talking through them with my friends, rubbing up against my limits, or on fire with inspiration, which going on retreats does for me. I'm on fire at young people's events. The enthusiasm is contagious and I feel energised by it. I'm on fire and at peace at Buddhafield East. That rhymed, didn't it? All working together intensely for hours on end. It's magical and special and absorbing. Something else takes over and I surrender to that. That is peace. All sharing values and going deeper together. Building connections that will last for years and years. That's not passive, that's active. There are ups and downs. There are falling in love and falling out. But rooting myself, yourself, and staying put through it and asking, how can I move forward now? Am I too comfortable? What can I change? Or you may not need to do that, because I feel like sometimes life throws stuff at me without me having to actively seek the fire. Or either that, I unconsciously clear the way for the stuff to come up for me to deal with. So if you are too comfortable, shake it up a bit. Give yourself a push into the funeral pyre like the phoenix. Go do something different to put yourself in the fire. Come and work at Buddhafield East and get naked in the hot tub. Or come and serve tea and cakes with me in a cafe at the Buddhafield Festival. Or take an MVC course. Or do five rhythms dancing. Or whatever the alternative is at the moment. Whatever challenges you. There's always progress to be made. And developing or surrendering, whatever way you look at it, is the way to peace. And if you're not on fire or in the fire, you're not at peace. Risk your significance to truly live, so that which comes to you as blossom goes on as fruit. So lastly, I'll just do a piece from Bhante. And now for our final point. Live intensely. Above all, be heroic. The spiritual life, the aesthetic life, is an adventure and a quest. It is a risky business. In the end, you have to let go of absolutely everything. If you always cling to comfort and safety, you'll never get anywhere. And if you can't be heroic all in one go, you need to learn by stages to become heroic, one step at a time.